This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on April 26th, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning, everybody. And good morning to a very special day here at the Federal Election Commission. As you may have guessed, today is Bring Your Sons and Daughters to Work Day. Thank you, all of you, for coming this morning. We're very excited to have you here, and particularly on an open meeting day. I'm going to let the children gavel in the meeting. So if you want to line up, like we talked about, right over here, and we'll go one by one, you can gavel the meeting in for us. And if you want to, you can say your name when you gavel the meeting in. Okay, here we go.
Antonio.
Good job, Antonio.
Maria.
Good job.
Anna.
Good job.
Ellen.
Georgia.
Good job, Georgia.
Natalie.
Good job.
Talia.
Good job.
Sela.
Isabel.
Isabel, that was good.
John.
Can I do it?
What's your name? What's your name?
Kate.
Kate. That's a pretty name.
Okay, now you like it.
Good job.
Yeah.
Do
you want to hit? You want to hit the gavel?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Good job. What's your name?
Your name?
Eli.
Good job, Eli.
Excellent. A big round of applause for our children. Excellent job, kids. Thank you very much. And now our meeting is officially come to order. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for the April 12, 2012 meeting. Madam Vice Chair, do you have a motion?
I do, Madam Chair. I move that we approve the minutes for the meeting of April 12, 2012, as set forth in agenda document number 12-28.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Motion passes. Madam Vice Chair, do we have a motion for a few late submitted documents?
I suppose we do. I move we waive the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents so that we may consider agenda document, let's see, which ones are submitted late. Agenda document 12-29. Agenda document 12-22B, 12-22C, 12-24B, 12-27. I think that's it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The motion passes. Excellent.
The next item on the agenda is the discussion of Draft Advisory Opinion 2012-12, Duncan Brands. And this morning we have a special guest and his children, who are really the special guests, Mr. William Miner, who's here representing Duncan Brands, and his daughters, Natalie and Georgia. Please join us. We have a presentation from Mr. Tony Buckley from the Office of General Counsel.
Thank you, Chair Hunter. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document 12-25 contains a draft advisory opinion that responds to requests submitted on behalf of Duncan Brands Incorporated. Duncan Brands is a corporation that is a franchisor of two restaurant chains. It has a political action committee, which is a separate segregated fund. The PAC currently solicits and accepts contributions only from the executive and administrative personnel of Duncan Brands. And Duncan Brands asks if the PAC may solicit and accept contributions from the non-corporate franchisee licensees and from the executive and administrative personnel of the corporate franchisees and licensees. The draft concludes that the PAC may solicit and accept contributions as requested because the extent of control Duncan Brands maintains over its franchisees and licensees causes the entities to be affiliated within the meaning of the Acting Commission regulations. The Commission received no comments on the request or the draft. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Buckley. Mr. Miner, thank you for coming this morning. Could you tell us a little bit about your request and about Duncan Brands, your client?
Sure, I'd be glad to. And thank you very much for the invitation to come and to bring my daughters. We appreciate it. We weren't doing anything like this at our own firm, so this is a nice treat. So thank you. And maybe for the kids, just to say that Duncan Brands is a company, and I think everybody knows one thing they make, but they also do ice cream. And as we were driving in this morning, we were talking about the wonders of a single store that has both donuts and ice cream. And we should all be so lucky as to have them near us. They're one of my favorite clients, and sadly they don't pay us in ice cream or donuts, though, but I wish they did. And so Duncan Brands, like lots of different companies, has a PAC, a political action committee, because the law will not allow them to make contributions to candidates directly. And so instead they can ask their employees and people that are associated with them to give money, and then that money can be given to candidates to be involved in elections and policy and all the things that they care about. And so the question that we pose to the commission today is whether they could ask people who work at the restaurants and who own the restaurants if they can give, because Duncan Brands and each of those restaurants is owned by someone who lives nearby. Again, we were talking this morning about what fun it would be to own a Dunkin' Donuts. And so all the Dunkin' Donuts around the country, and there are actually 16,000 of them around the world, are owned by different people. And in order to do that, they apply to Duncan Brands, and they decide whether to give that person what they call a franchise. Really, a franchise is a chance to own a restaurant. And so if they give them that franchise, they have to agree to do lots of things. They have to serve the same donuts so that when you go to a Dunkin' Donuts here, it's got the same chocolate sprinkled donut that you want to have when you're someplace else, and all sorts of other requirements. And so the question we posed to the commission was whether Dunkin' Brands could ask the people who own those Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin-Robbins to give to this political action committee. So that's the gist of our request.
Thank you very much. Well put. Do any of the kids have any questions? Natalie or Georgia, do you have any questions for your dad or any questions for Mr. Miner? Byron, are you raising your hand? No? Okay. Just checking. Okay. Nevin, you're a really tall kid out there. Well, your request sounds reasonable to me, and I think we are inclined to support it. Let me see if my colleagues have any questions for you. Hearing none, is there a motion, Madam Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Miner, Georgia, and Natalie. I move that we approve the answer to Duncan Brands as set forth in agenda document number 12-25, which will become advisory opinion 2012-12.
Thank you very much, Madam Vice Chair. All those in favor of the motion? Oh, Commissioner McGann?
I hate to spoil the fun. I just want to say I appreciated the request, particularly the chart. It was time well spent. The chart lays out all past AOs and broke down the franchise agreement, and I don't want to interject some law in this, but I wanted to put that on the record that I thought it made our job much easier. And for others looking for answers to AOs, this is a very good model to follow because it makes our life much easier.
Mr. Miner was talking about the law.
No, he was.
Okay. You wanted to elaborate.
I didn't have anything else to say, so I just had to try to cram in there with my abrupt segue. Sorry.
Got it.
Thank you.
So for the benefit of Georgia and Natalie, what he was saying is that your dad did a good job.
Yes. Thank you. That's exactly the right translation.
We're also saying to the client that it was money well spent.
Money well spent.
We're really going to keep it real.
Thank you.
Yes. Everybody wins. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. Good job, everybody.
Guys.
You're going to applaud all the councils.
Thank you for coming. We're going to take a brief recess, and the children are going to go have a snack in the fourth floor conference room. Thank you for coming, everyone. Thank you. Welcome to the meeting, Commissioner Walther and Professor Zolt. The next matter on the agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2012-8. We will begin with a presentation from Mr. Theodore Lutz from the Office of General Counsel.
Thank you, Chair Honor. Good morning, Commissioners. Before you are two agenda documents which were held over from the April 12th open session. Agenda document 12-21 and 12-21A respond to an advisory opinion request followed by a repledge. Repledge is a corporation that proposes to establish a web-based platform that would allow individuals to remove pledged funds in equal amounts from opposing candidates for federal office and instead donate their funds to charitable organizations. Repledge has asked a series of questions relating to its proposal. Agenda document 12-21 concludes that Repledge may establish its platform and engage in the activity it proposes. Agenda document 12-21A concludes that Repledge's activity would violate the prohibition on a corporation facilitating the making of contributions. The Commission received one comment on draft B. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Lutz. Professor Zolt, I believe we do have questions from commissioners. Hopefully you'll be able to hear us.
Yes, I can hear you. And first, thank you for the opportunity to appear, and I apologize for not being able to be there in person, but classes are just ending here at UCLA. And, Chair, I'm disappointed that the children are gone. I think they might find the replay platform interesting.
They would have loved to hear your request. Unfortunately, we're having a bit of a hard time hearing you. We'll try to proceed. If this doesn't work, what we're going to do is move this matter to the end of the agenda. I hope that's okay with you, but it won't be too much. Probably we may have to call you back in about an hour, but let's give this a whirl.
Okay, and I'll try and talk louder.
Okay, thank you. It's very hard for us to hear you. Madam Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, Mr. Zolt, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, this is Ellen Weintraub. I'm trying to. I find this a very problematic request because I feel like we're kind of trying to fit a square peg into a round hole here. In your original request, you said Repledge will be providing services only to its members and not to federal political committees. But then in your comment, you said, no, we will be providing federal committees with the very limited service of providing a platform for sending contributions to federal committees that are not successfully diverted to charities. As you may know, we look at it differently depending on whether the service is being provided to the contributors or the service is being provided to the recipient committees. So can you help me understand which it is?
Yes, Commissioner Weintraub, I think I can. In our original submission, our original advisory opinion request on page 12, we do state that Repledge will be providing federal committees with the very limited service of providing a platform for sending the contributions. And there we would be providing both the processing service that we would supervise, the payment processor that we retain, and we would also be providing them with information necessary for them to compile donor information to fulfill their report. I think our basic service is really a matchmaking service that we are a match.com for political opposites who want to still support their candidates but see the money go to a more useful purpose. But we are providing a level of service, I would say, both to the political committees and to our members. It's just a very limited service, and the service is really identical to that provided in Democracy Engine or Brooks or GivingSphere.
Well, as you may or may not know, I didn't vote for the Brooks AO, so that may not be your strongest argument with me. And I think it's not actually quite like Democracy Engine either. I'm also a little bit confused about whether you consider the services that PayPal is going to provide in getting the contribution to the actual candidates, should the contributions not be matched and diverted to charity. Is PayPal, do you see PayPal as acting as your agent or not? And, you know, just so you know, the and maybe you know this already, we have a line of AOs that talk about check processing services. You know, if you're providing services to the donors that are sort of like check processing services, the commission has approved that in the past. It's not clear to me that you're actually doing that because you seem to be sort of distancing yourself from the actual donation to the political committees and saying, well, if you want to do that, then go deal with PayPal. So I'm, you know, and at the same time, we have another line of cases that says if we look at you as providing primarily services to the political committees, you might be a commercial vendor to them, although you don't seem to quite be providing commercial vendor services to the political committees. Again, you seem to want to be more distancing yourself from them. It's an odd kind of vendor relationship that would involve your advocating that people not give money to the political committees. But can you help me out on the on whether you think the PayPal services are actually part of your operation or not?
Yes, Commissioner Weintraub, I view them as part of our operation. We've been in discussions with both PayPal and WePay, and we will, in effect, integrate their payment services into our final web page. So we are the ones who are retaining them and supervising their operations and directing them how to distribute the funds. We set this up as an independent, as to make sure the funds flow.
Mr. Zoll, what was the last thing you said? You trailed off there at the end.
I'm sorry. That we view it as a contractor relationship where we are supervising.
Mr. Zolti, you still there?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Okay.
Yeah, let me try.
So let's move on to the next matter on the agenda, and we'll get him back on the phone toward the end of the meeting, and that'll give you some time to think about it. How's that?
Okay.
Perfect. Okay, it all worked out well. All right, the next matter on the agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2012-09, Points for Politics.
Madam Chair, are you able to...
I'm not sure if Mr. Urban or John Sims are here this morning. Okay.
Madam Chair, are you able to hear me? Steve Walter.
I have a presentation from Mr. Bloom, the Office of General Counsel. Mr. Bloom?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Agenda document number 12-29 is a draft response to a request for an advisory opinion from Points for Politics, a limited liability company taxed as a partnership. The requester asks whether it may offer a patented system to individuals and political committees that converts points awarded by corporations to individual consumers as an incentive to purchase the corporation's goods or services, such as, for example, frequent flyer miles, into monetary equivalents that those individuals could then contribute to political committees. The draft concludes that, based on the facts and representations provided, Points for Politics may implement its proposal without making a contribution or otherwise violating the Act or Commission regulations, because in doing so it would be functioning as a commercial vendor. We received no comments on the request or the draft. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bloom. Any questions or comments on this advisory opinion? Madam Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I think that the draft is correct, and I plan to support it. I think it's important to note, though, what it says and what it doesn't say. What the Commission has a line of opinions on affinity programs, and in each case, the Commission has delved into the details of that particular affinity program to see whether we thought that basically the ownership interest in the affinity rebates or whatever was being offered were concrete enough to say that yes, the prospective donor actually owns this this asset and therefore can donate it to a political committee without it being in some sense a subsidy by the corporation that awarded the whatever the benefit was. The way I read this request is as a request by Points for Politics to verify that their services as a processor won't be deemed a corporate contribution. And I think that's right for the reasons set forth here. But that doesn't really address whether any particular loyalty program that they might choose to try and get into their network, I guess, might qualify. I think about the terms of some of my loyalty programs, and they seem somewhat ephemeral. You know, these frequent flyer points that appear and then they disappear, and if you don't use them within a certain amount of time, they're gone, and the airline can change the terms at any time. And I don't know. The Commission hasn't ruled on whether a program like that would be convey a sufficiently concrete ownership interest to the individual who might seek to convert those points to a political contribution in order to pass muster here. We haven't been asked that question. We're not answering that question. So I think, you know, Points for Politics is getting a yes, but it's a somewhat limited yes and doesn't address any of the loyalty programs, the terms of any of the loyalty programs themselves, which, of course, we don't have in front of us.
Thank you. Any other comments on the draft? Is there a motion, Madam Vice Chair?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we approve the draft answer to Points for Politics in Advisory Opinion 2012-09 as set forth in Agenda Document 12-29. Right? It's 12-29. Okay.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Walther, are you on the phone?
Can you hear me?
Okay. We'll go ahead and vote on this matter, and then we'll try again to get him on the phone for the next one. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it, 5-0. Thank you very much. The next matter on the agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2012-10, Greenberg, Quinlan, Rosner Research. Mr. Sandler and Ms. Howard are here with us again this morning. I'm not sure if we have any questions for you, but please feel free to just have a seat. We're going to take another minute to try to get Commissioner Walther on the phone. I know he wanted to listen to this discussion, so I'll give him another try. Okay. We actually don't anticipate any questions for you. Feel free to sit there for another minute, but I'm told that Commissioner Walther can record his vote after we vote here. So I think that when we'll do the proper motion for that at a later point, as long as he records his vote before the end of the day, that's what I'm told. So I believe we can go forward with this advisory opinion, and we will ensure that he is able to cast his vote on this as well. Ms. Woodhaworth?
Chair Hunter, we know that Commissioner Walther can hear the discussion in the room. We
okay.
just have a problem trying to hear him here. So we do know he's on the line and he's following.
Steve, it's good to know you can hear us. I know you're having fun, but we will record your vote. No worries. If you have any questions, that's too bad because we can't hear you.
Okay, so...
We need some kind of a motion to ensure that he can record his vote.
We're going to worry about that later.
Okay.
Okay. We've already had a presentation on this the last go-round, but Ms. Hayden, do you have any presentation for us this morning?
Hi, this is Steve Walker.
Can you just add that... Well, first, thank you, Chair Hunter. Good morning, Commissioners. And again, before you are two agenda documents which were held over from the last open session on April 12th. Those are 12-22 and 12-22A. We also have new agenda documents, 12-22B and 12-22C. And again, collectively, all of these consist of six draft advisor opinions responding to a request from Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research Incorporated. In addition to what we presented last time, I guess what we can add is that revised draft D also declines to render an advisory opinion, and draft E concludes that the Act and Commission regulations preempt the New Hampshire state law with respect to the proposed telephone surveys paid for by federal candidates, but it does not reach a conclusion as to those surveys paid for by nonprofit organizations. Again, we have received no new comments since the last time, but we did overall received two comments on the request and four comments on the drafts. Thank you. I'd be happy to address any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Hayden. Are there any questions for Mr. Sandler or Ms. Howard? Mr. Sandler, the consensus draft was just probably sent to you, or I should call it draft E, was sent to you probably late in the day yesterday. Do you have any questions or comments on it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The only question I have is whether it's the intent of draft E, the first part of draft E, when it says it's preempted, the state statute's preempted insofar as it purports to apply to proposed telephone calls paid for by federal candidates, not nonprofits. Is it the intent that that would also apply to other federal political committees that are not authorized committees of candidates? That's something that possibly was intended to be covered one way or the other, but isn't mentioned in the draft.
Commissioner Bowerly?
On page 5 of the draft at the top. At the bottom lines, I think it is, and I thought we had language in there that said that. Sorry, give me one second.
Right, well, I was referring to page 7 of draft E, lines 3 through 6 that state the actual conclusion of the AL.
Yes.
Commissioner McGann?
The question asks, federal candidates or authorized committees or other federal political committees that refer only to candidates for federal office. It answers that question, yes, but there is this at the end, seems to limit it to federal candidates, and I don't know if that's...
Yeah, I think on page 6 where we state that I think it is intended to cover the rest of them. I think that was in our back and forth, perhaps just missed in the draft, but... It states it is preempted to the extent it forced to regulate the surveys paid for by federal candidates, their authorized committees, or other federal political committees on page 6, lines 3 through 6.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. Can we do... Go ahead. It's not really... Is it a technical amendment, Madam Chair? Would we just make an amendment at the table and say, on line 5 of page 7, after federal candidates, add the phrase... their authorized committees or other federal political committees.
I think we should make the amendment once the motion is made to adopt the draft.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Sandler or Ms. Howard? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just on the same line, I believe on page 4, line 11, we may also need to conform that language, the way the sentence reads, right, or at least the fragment, talks about with respect to the proposed telephone surveys that refer only to candidates for federal office and that are made on behalf of, right, currently it says, or are in support of or in opposition to federal candidates. I believe we may need, let me just make sure that that others agree. I believe we want to strike the language or in support of or in opposition to and instead have it read that refer only to candidates for federal office that are made on behalf of federal candidates and then add authorized committees or other federal political committees.
Hello.
Oh,
Mr. Zolt?
Steve?
Yes.
Okay. Steve, you'd appear out of the air. We were just discussing some...
I've heard everything, but I couldn't speak until I got off, and then I called in the other number for the leader. I was supposed to call the participant, Pasco, but I could still hear everybody, and I could even hear the council. But now I went in and called the leader, Pasco, which I thought was... Well, the one I wasn't supposed to call, but anyhow, it's good to talk to you.
We're glad that you are able to speak. Okay, so then you know we're talking about some somewhat technical changes to draft E, and I believe Commissioner Peterson will make a motion here shortly with the amendments that we've discussed.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Yes, I'm aware of the situation.
Okay. Commissioner Peterson?
Okay, I just brought up a possible change to lines 10 and 11 of page 4, and I think that would make this consistent, that the answer would then be consistent with the question that is posed.
Do you want to make that motion?
Okay, sure. Okay. And if I could just add one comment. There have been drafts dealing with the question of whether or not we should be even answering this AO. And I was seriously considering that issue. As I mentioned last time, the commission, as currently constituted, hasn't dealt with preemption often, but as a requester has pointed out, the commission over its history has done so on many occasions, and I think as a result of that, if we were to change course, the burden would be on us to justify why we would do so. And as I've looked at how other agencies have done it, you know, I just did kind of I don't know how extensive of a sample it is, but, you know, the Department of Labor issues advisory opinions with respect to ERISA, and to the extent that ERISA may preempt state laws, the Federal Trade Commission, the FDIC, the Office of Thrift Supervisor and Comptroller of the Currency also issue advisory opinions regarding preemption of state law. There was actually a GAO report that was issued a number of years ago with respect to titled the Role of the Office of Thrift Supervision and the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency in the Preemption of State Law, and talking about how both of those agencies deal with preemption. And I thought that a relevant sentence from that is also relevant for us. It says affected parties may seek guidance from agencies requesting their view on whether a particular federal statute preempts a particular state law. In these instances, the agency may issue an advisory opinion in which it opines on the issue. And it talks about how OTS and OCC do that. It says, however, agency guidance is not an indispensable part of the preemption process. Ultimately, the courts decide whether federal law preempts state law in a particular area. But in light of not only this agency's practice, but agency practice throughout the federal government is to issue advisory opinions on these state preemption issues. I believe it is proper for us to opine on this agency's jurisdiction and how it affects potentially conflicting state laws. And as a result of that, we're not going to be voting on any other drafts. If there were support, I was in support of draft A, but I know that there's not majority support for that, so I'm comfortable with voting for draft E. And if now's the time that's appropriate, I'd like to make a motion to that we adopt draft E.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't be supporting the motion, but don't worry, Mr. Sandler, you're going to have your votes, so it'll be okay. I just wanted to comment in part on the same issue that Commissioner Peterson was just talking about. I think it's a very difficult question because we are we're not only acting under sort of general principles of when agencies should issue advisory opinions, but we have a very specific statute that talks about when we should issue advisory opinions and to whom and the kind of conduct that we should opine on. I know that commissioners in times gone by have thought this was an appropriate issue for an advisory opinion, and many of them voted for this without really a lot of analysis as to the question of whether we were really the commission was really opining on the conduct of the requester or the conduct of some other person. It seems to me that the relief that you're seeking is really for us to tell the Attorney General in New Hampshire that he can't enforce his law against you, which seems more like somebody else's conduct than your own. I think it's a tough question and a close call. Were I to support a draft, it would probably be revised draft D, but I'm not going to bother to make the motion because it wouldn't get support, and I don't need to make a pointless motion, but I just wanted to explain why I'm not going to be supporting the motion that's on the table.
Thank you. Commissioner Peterson, does your motion include the amendments that you discussed earlier?
Yes. Thank you. Yes, so the revisions on, I believe it was on page 4 and also on page, was that 7?
7, yeah.
Page 7. Yes, my motion includes both of those revisions.
Is that motion clear for everybody? Sure, Commissioner McGann.
Just so we're clear, I think we're going to take the language that's actually in the question and take that language and put it in the response. I think that's the easiest way to do it, so there's no fuzziness. So page 4, I understand that lines 9 through 11 would change. We would strike that refer only to candidates for federal office and are made on behalf of or in support of or in opposition to federal candidates and replace that with made on behalf of federal candidates, their authorized committees, or other federal political committees that refer only to candidates for federal office. I've taken that verbatim from the question. Similar change, as I understand the motion, would be on page 7, line 5, where it says paid for by federal candidates. I understand the motion to be we would strike federal candidates and substitute in federal candidates, their authorized committees, or other federal political committees that refer only to candidates for federal office.
Commissioner Peterson, is that consistent with your motion?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you. I would add a friendly amendment to ask sure. Council to make any technical and conforming changes to this one, given the edits. And I will support the motion, but I agree with Commissioner Weintraub and what Commissioner Peterson was saying, that I think this is a difficult area for us to be in. I know the commission has been here before, but this ultimately is a question, in my view, for the courts. The commission has opined in this area, and this commission actually did it when West Virginia itself came to us requesting guidance as to what we would think, given a statute that it had in its jurisdiction. So I think this is a difficult question, a close call. I will support draft E, but I wanted to note that I think this is an unusual situation, and in this instance, I think this answer is appropriate. But I do take seriously and take to heart the limitations of our advisory opinion process. I think it's, as it's laid out in the statute, requires us to be fairly careful when we go into these areas. So I will support the draft.
Any other comments? Commissioner Welther? You good? Mm-hmm. Commissioner McGann?
I just want to echo what Commissioner Peterson said on regarding if left to my own devices, I'd support draft A. I think I said that last meeting, but I want to make that clear because folks sometimes like to know where individual commissioners are.
And the same for me. I would have supported draft A as well, but happy to vote for draft E this morning. There's a motion on the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Steve, are you still on the phone?
Okay, we'll record his vote later, but my understanding is that he is planning to support draft E. All those opposed?
No.
The ayes have it at this moment 4-1, but that'll probably change by the end of the day to 5-1. Thank you very much. Thank you for your patience.
Hello? From 202 area code.
The next matter on the agenda is draft advisory opinion 2012-11, free speech. We have with us this morning Mr. Ben Barr and Mr. Stephen Klein.
Mute where they can't hear.
Okay, we're going to get going, and we may be able to have Commissioner Walther join us. But here we go. Back again to draft advisory opinion 2012-11, free speech. And Mr. Stepanovic, do you have a presentation for us this morning?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Chair Hunter, and good morning, Commissioners. At the open meeting held on April 12, the Commission considered agenda documents 1224 and 1224A in response to requests for advisory opinion filed on behalf of free speech. Consideration of these agenda documents has been held over from that open meeting to today's open meeting. Agenda document number 1224 concludes that none of the ads would be express advocacy, none of the proposed donation requests would solicit contributions, and free speech's proposed activities would not require it to register or report as a political committee. Agenda document number 1224A concludes that 7 of the 11 proposed ads would be express advocacy, 2 of the 4 proposed donation requests would be solicitations of contributions, and free speech's proposed activities would require it to register and report with the commission as a political committee. Since the April 12th open meeting, the commission has released another draft advisory opinion designated as draft C and presented before you as agenda document 1224B. Draft C concludes that one of the free speech's proposed ads would expressly advocate the election or defeat of a clearly identified federal candidate. None of the proposed donation requests would solicit contributions, and free speech's proposed activities would not require it to register and report as a political committee. The commission has not received any comments since the last open meeting, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us again, Mr. Barr, and welcome, Mr. Klein.
Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions or comments? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought about saying some of this when we were when I was making the motion on the late submitted documents, but I decided not to say this with the kids in the room.
That was nice.
You know, I mean, it's not that unusual for commissioners to submit late submitted documents, including really late submitted documents, but that usually means that commissioners are all working together to come up with something that we could vote for at the table. I've never seen a 56-page draft with substantial revisions from the earlier draft that wasn't even shared with colleagues until 10:30 the night before the meeting. And I have to tell you, I turned off my BlackBerry at that point, so I didn't see it until this morning. Still haven't read the whole thing. I just didn't have time. I assume that this document was not written to inform deliberations at the table today because it wasn't given to us in time for us to really read it. And I assume it wasn't provided so that the requester could comment on it because he didn't get it until even later than I did. So I'm not sure who your audience is for this, but it's clearly not me. And I'm not going to attempt to engage on it because, as I said, I haven't had time to read it. I do think that there are a couple of sort of meta issues about this request, one of which we can address and one of which we really can't. I think implicit in your request, and I don't think you're going to disagree with what I'm about to say, is the notion that in a world where billionaires can make multi-million dollar contributions to super PACs, does it make sense to ask three ranchers who want to spend a few thousand dollars on a few ads, does it make sense to ask them to register as a political committee and go through all the hoops that entails? And I think that's that question is implicit in your request. I think it's an interesting question. It's plainly not one that we can answer. It's a question for Congress as to whether the thresholds are set at the right levels, but I do think it's implicit in your request. And as I said, I think it's an interesting and intriguing question, and it's one that's worth other folks talking about. I think the question that is in your request that is that we can answer, and we attempt to answer, and by the way, I was prepared to answer 2 weeks ago. You know, I think three of us were ready to vote 2 weeks ago, and I'm sorry that we were not able to do that. That was not from the delay was not on our side. The other question that I think is you know, sort of the meta question that's raised by your request is whether an ad that is an attack on the character qualifications and fitness for office of a clearly identified candidate can then segue into a call to action that is, in some instances, a complete non sequitur, whether that will save it and thereby make it not express advocacy. And I don't think the answer to that is yes. And interestingly enough, as I said, I didn't thoroughly read my colleague's draft, but I did note that their analysis of the financial reform ad, which I do appreciate that your position changed on that, and I think that's the right, you came to the right conclusion there. In my colleague's analysis, it says the addition of the statement, call President Obama and put his antics to an end, does not negate the fact that the ad contains express advocacy. They, of course, go on to say under Section 100.22A. Now, I agree with the first part of that. The addition of a statement at the end of the ad does not negate the express advocacy that was previously expressed in the ad, if express advocacy can be expressed. That's a little bit redundant. Our big disagreement here, again, speaking at the meta level, is whether we're going to apply 100.22B or not. And, you know, we say yes, you say no. Okay, that's, you know, really, that's the whole ball of wax right there. And that's really all I have to say. I'm going to continue to support the draft that I was ready to support 2 weeks ago.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Commissioner McGinn?
Just one question for the, actually two questions for the requester. One, I'm going to give you an opportunity to, not that you have to, but comment on any of the drafts one final time, and then any thoughts you have on anything that's been said at the table. Nothing specific in those questions, general questions. I'm curious to hear your thoughts and give you an opportunity to weigh in.
So I've just worked my way through draft C during the earlier proceedings. And, you know, it seems to be an expansion of what we saw, excuse me if I'm using the denominations, or what I think it was B before. And I take no issue with the analysis, I believe the financial reform ad, that bears a similarity to MCFL. What works and what is helpful in draft C is the clear articulation of legal standards that the FEC is applying in its interpretation and prospective enforcement of 100.22B. That's what we're looking for, so that the organization and the individual speakers will be able to go out and be in compliance with the law. So it's it is helpful on that front, and it enables us to be able to exercise our First Amendment rights and in compliance with the Act. As to comments about the meta discussions and philosophical considerations, I don't have anything to opine on those points.
Uh,
Any other questions, comments? Okay.
I guess each of us can make motions on our drafts. Just to comment on something that the vice chair mentioned. I mean, that this was later than we intended. I think that we would have liked to have gotten this out earlier. It was our intention to. It's a fairly lengthy and involved analysis, and it wasn't the result of trying to sandbag or drop something late. It was just that it just took a lot of time, and I don't think there was any mystery from after the last meeting. There is some overlap, but I think that we were on fairly different planes on where we thought how this question was going to be answered, and so we viewed this more as kind of clarifying our thoughts on this. Not with we never expected or hoped that we were going to get others in light of you know, previous votes that we've taken and previous comments that we've made. But to the extent that we can get drafts out earlier, that's certainly our intention. But just wanted to raise that. But without any further ado, I move approval of draft C of draft advisory opinion 2012-11 as set forth in agenda document number 12-24-B.
Thank you. Any comments on the motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion fails 3-2. Any other motions? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of draft B as set forth in agenda document number 12-24A.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? No. The motion fails 2-3. Thank you very much. I believe that it would be useful for the Office of General Counsel to compile a advisory opinion that answers, I believe it's just one question that we're able to answer putting the two drafts together. Is it two? Is it a couple? I'm sorry. One in one section and then a couple in the other. Right.
Right. There are some ads that everyone agrees are not express advocacy.
That's true.
Right.
Sorry.
So
yes.
There'll be one that is, some that aren't. Right.
Okay, and we'll circulate that sort of consensus draft on tally vote as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next matter on the agenda is draft advisory opinion 2012-13, Physicians Hospitals of America. Mr. Buckley, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Chair Hunter. Good morning again, Commissioners. Agenda document 12-26 contains a draft advisory opinion that responds to a request submitted on behalf of Physician Hospitals of America. The requester is an association of physician-owned hospitals in Texas whose member hospitals are owned by various legal entities. The hospitals provide services to patients through Medicare, Medicaid, TRICARE, and CHAMPUS, all federal programs. Requester asks whether the involvement of its member hospitals and their owners with these federal programs causes them to become federal contractors who would be prohibited from making contributions to independent expenditure-only political committees under the Act and Commission regulations. The draft concludes that the member hospitals and their owners would not become federal contractors under the circumstances as described. The legislative history of the Act and the explanation and justification to the Commission's federal contractor regulations both make clear that participation in Medicare and Medicaid does not cause a person to become a federal contractor. TRICARE and CHAMPUS are programmatically similar to Medicare and Medicaid, and the draft concludes that participation in those programs should not cause a person to become a federal contractor either. The Commission received no comments on the request or the draft. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Buckley. Any questions or comments on the draft? We have a motion. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of advisory opinion 2012-13, Physicians Hospital of America, as set forth in agenda document number 12-26.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. The next matter on the agenda is draft advisory opinion 2012-14, Sean McCutcheon. And this morning we have Mr. Stephen Hursting and Mr. Dan Backer. Thank you for joining us, gentlemen, and thank you for your patience.
fun figuring out who's sitting where.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Chairman Hunter and Commissioners.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Mr. Buckley, again.
Thank you, Chair Hunter. Good morning again, Commissioners. Agenda document 12-27 contains a draft advisory opinion that responds to requests submitted on behalf of Sean McCutcheon. Mr. McCutcheon wishes to make contributions to federal candidates during the 2011-2012 election cycle that will total in the aggregate $54,440. He asks whether he may do so. The draft concludes that Mr. McCutcheon may make contributions to federal candidates during the 2011-2012 election cycle that will total in the aggregate no more than $46,200, because that is the maximum amount allowed by the Act and Commission regulations. The Commission received one comment on the request and no comments on the draft, and I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Buckley. Any questions or comments on the draft? Commissioner McGinn.
I think one question of the requester. Assume I agree with everything you're saying in your comment. This is an advisory opinion at the FEC. How can I not look at the Act, see the biennial limit, and say the biennial limit is what it is? We don't really have the discretion to massage it to comport with the facts of this. And even though this requester is slightly over the biennial limit, what gives the FEC the power in an AO to give you the answer that you ultimately seek?
Commissioner McGann, I think I'd say a couple things about that. First of all, the biennial aggregate limit was split in two in BCRA, and what you have now is in A, you have a limit on amounts given to candidates only. In B, you have a limit on amounts given to PACs and political party committees. And if you look at the analysis in Buckley, what the court said there was, we are going to, even though it was not heavily briefed or heavily argued before the Buckley court all those many years ago, what the court there eventually said was, we'll uphold it nonetheless, because what it allows Congress to do is stop a circumvention through unearmarked, and that's an important construct, unearmarked contributions to political party committees and political action committees. Now, that is not being challenged by Mr. McCutcheon. He's not challenging the amount he can give to PACs or party committees. He's only charging the part about giving to candidates. So if you look at recent cases, we believe, first of all, that that doesn't actually prevent quid pro quo corruption. So under Buckley itself, we think that the commission could say that this really doesn't prevent corruption, we're going to lift the limit. But on the other thing I would say about this, the other thing I would say is this. Those who have commented in the press that there's really nothing the commission could do for us would probably also agree that we really have to start at the commission. We probably have to ask this question to the FEC. That's my answer.
I appreciate that. And I, as I said, let's assume for the sake of argument, I agree that Buckley doesn't, it doesn't reach this issue. It was a different system, a different amount of money, yet different avenues of giving. You're not challenging the party side, but back then you could still give money to national parties regardless of amount. Federal law now says you can't at all. So there is a lot of issues around the biennial limit that weren't present. All that's well and good, but it's not just what I read in the paper. There's a comment that came in that says really the commission doesn't have any choice but to say, look, the Act says what it says. And then if you want to move along either to, oh, I don't know, the legislative branch of government or the judicial branch of government, then that's your prerogative. But I'm not sure how we as an agency can take matters in our own hands and decide a case of first impression on constitutional grounds that says the biennial limit silences speech. I mean, it's characterized as a contribution limit. On the other hand, as a practical matter, I think it's probably more of a spending limit. I did some math because I wasn't really sure where this was going to go, but I figured if you wanted to give money to every federal candidate, one side of the aisle who ultimately wins, I figured out, and if you want to split the money equally in the biennial limit, it comes out to $98.50 per candidate. unless you want to give the primary in general, then it's $49.25 per candidate. The math is 435 House seats plus 33 Senate seats. I rounded it down because, you know, it's a third of the Senate, but there's 100 of those guys. One candidate for president is 469. You divide that, and you end up with that. Now, if you maxed out to the presidential candidate, primary in general, you're down to $44.015 per candidate. And this assumes you pick all the primary winners correctly. So I see where you're going. And even if I agree that seems to be on the wrong side of Randall versus Sorrell, I'm not sure how, as a commissioner, I can do that, other than to say the act says what it says, and then it's in your own hands. I appreciate you coming here, exhausting the administrative remedies. That's what I hear you saying.
That's what I'm saying.
I want to make sure that's all we're doing here today.
Well, I think everything you just mentioned, it certainly shows that the issues in this case, I mean, really what we have here is no corruption being prevented. And it is incumbent upon all requesters, all citizens, really, to exhaust their administrative remedies. That's basic admin law, basic con law.
Congress must have had some basis, though, to put this in.
Yeah. They must have.
Okay.
Any other questions? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually don't think you need to be here. I don't think this is the kind of issue that requires exhaustion of administrative remedies. I think if you had chosen to go straight to court, because basically it's a challenge to the statute itself. I agree with Commissioner McGann. I don't think there's any way we could say yes to what you're asking under the statute. I actually think that Buckley did address this, but there's no point in having that argument. It's this issue ultimately, if it is to be resolved, will have to be resolved by a court. If it is to be resolved in your favor, it will have to be resolved by either a court or the legislature. You know, the legislature could change the limits or lift the limits. I understand some people have recommended that. But I think, you know, we don't have any choice. And as I said, I don't think you need to be here. You're welcome. I hope I'll get a chance to see a picture of your child, Mr. Hursting, because I haven't seen one in quite a long time. And it would have been nice if you had brought your child along with you. But, you know, you're always welcome here, but I don't think you actually – I was kind of scratching my head as to why you bothered with the advisory opinion request. But, you know, you're welcome.
Well, Vice Chair Weintraub, I appreciate that. And I'd love to show you pictures of Owen, who's four now, and
at
daycare right now. Having a great time, I hope. And I hope the weather's a little better where he is than where we are. It didn't appear to us to be an open and shut question as to whether we had to come here first or not. We have a client who wants to give too many challenges in his 2012 cycle. He's trying to find a way to do that.
Mr. Backer has a new baby as well.
I didn't know that. See, I know about Mr. Hursting's child.
Yes,
didn't know.
And
I'm not as up on Mr.
Six
Backer.
Months old?
Five and a half. Just mastered sitting up yesterday. So if I had known, I would have brought him. But
The
bumbo.
Maybe next year. Excellent.
Always welcome to take your kid to work day at the FEC.
That's right. Any other questions or comments? Any other kids we should talk about?
Mine are too old.
Can we just go ahead and move? I couldn't
Commissioner
remember
Peterson?
If part of your comments, if you actually included a motion.
No,
but
I did
I'll
not
just
include.
Okay.
I would have been happy to, but feel free.
Let's just cut to the chase. I move approval of draft advisory opinion 2012-14 as set forth in agenda document number 12-27.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it 5-0. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next matter on the agenda is the Feinstein for Senate draft advisory opinion 2012-7, and is noted by on the agenda that has been held over to the next public meeting. We anticipate talking about that on May 10th, and as those of you who were here at the last public meeting know, Mr. Mark Elias is putting together some additional comments for us, so we are awaiting those comments, and we will hopefully talk about it at the next public meeting. So now we are going to take a brief recess to attempt to get Mr. Zolt back on the phone and also hopefully Commissioner Walther. Let's reconvene, please, at 11:35. Thank you. Professor Zolt, thank you very much for your patience. This is Caroline Hunter. Sorry about the technical difficulties this morning. The good news is we can hear you loud and clear now. So.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much. We might need to go over, I'm not sure if Commissioner Weintraub wants to go back through some of what you already said because it was very difficult for us to hear you, so I'll ask her.
Yes, this is Ellen Weintraub again, Mr. Zolt. I actually would like to sort of go through the questions and answers again because I could barely hear you last time.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Boy, now it's like a whole new world now. You're suddenly loud and clear. Tell me again, I mean, my basic problem here is trying to figure out whether you are providing a service to the donors, which is requires one set of analysis from the commission, or whether you're providing a service to the political committees that might benefit from your process here, even if that's not your intent, and also how you view your relationship with PayPal or WePay or whatever other entities are out there that would actually be processing the money flow.
Okay, Commissioner Weintraub, we pledge primarily view that we are providing services for the at the request and the benefit of our users. But I don't think that makes it mutually exclusive that there is some limited service that is also provided for the political committee. And I think we do that in the ordinary course of our business for a commercially reasonable fee. But again, our primary service is provided to the donors, and there is a limited service with respect to both transfer of funds and providing information with respect to the donor's occupation, age, address, other information required for reporting purposes. I don't think that's any different than Democracy Engine or GivingSphere, where again, although it's stated it's provided exclusively for the purposes of the members or the users. In those two cases, there's also incidental benefits provided to the political committee. So I think the nature of the structure makes it that there's really services provided at both ends. But I think the key is we're doing it in the ordinary course of our business for a commercially reasonable fee. With respect to the payment processor, again, I think we're exactly the same as Democracy Engine and GivingSphere. The payment processor is acting as our agent, our direction and control. We're working with them now on embedding their processing feature in our website. It will be seamless to the users, but they will know that the money is totally in control of the payment processor. So this is really an internal control situation. We're trying to avoid any chance of expropriation, misuse of funds that would be similar to what you're dealing with in advisory opinion request 212.7. But again, what we're trying to do is set up a transparent, risk-free device for our users to collect funds from them and then almost immediately transfer it to the charities or the political committees.
So you view this as your repledge will actually be collecting the funds even if they go straight to PayPal?
That's correct. That I view it as the funds are entered. I don't know, Commissioner Weintraub, if you had an opportunity to look at our beta webpage. But you would select your candidate, you would select the charity that would get the funds if the funds are not matched, and then you enter the amount. And the way it would work is the funds would be put on hold until the end of what we call a fund drive, the 14-day period. And then at the end of the fund drive, your credit card would be charged for that amount. So whether we use WePay or PayPal, it's just an agent, a financial institution, that has to be what Democracy Engine and GivingSphere did. I'm sure they didn't process the payments themselves, that they were done under the direction and control of a contractor, a third-party financial institution.
I actually don't know whether that's true or not. I'd have to go back and look, and I'm not even sure whether we had that information at the time. I guess from my perspective, what you're describing today is a little bit different from what I thought were the facts based on your request and your comment. So personally, I'd like to think about that a little bit more.
Okay. I apologize if we were not clear in either our initial request or the comment we filed. But the way we have structured it has always been as a primary service to the donor and an incidental service to the political committee. On the payment processing, I think I understand where the confusion arises. We were extremely, in my mind, diligent of trying to get the point across that Repledge would never touch the money. And that's really from a point of view of inspiring confidence in our donors and setting up a operating system here at Repledge where we don't have any cash exposure.
I hear that, but again, you know, so is Repledge never touching the money, or are PayPal and WePay acting as their agents in processing the transactions, in which case Repledge actually is touching the money?
Yeah, so it is both. We're never physically touching the money, but Repledge is retaining these guys as our agents. Commissioner Weintraub, I agree with you to the extent that Repledge is our agent and they're touching the money. We are deemed to be touching the money. Turns out there's insurance provisions by using one of these processing services that users can take advantage of if there's any misappropriation of funds. So it's more physical rather than legal control.
Okay, I'm actually looking at the Democracy Engine opinion right now, and it does actually appear that in that case, Democracy Engine was literally processing the payments themselves. I don't know.
Okay.
So, I mean, it is a little bit different. I'd like to think about whether I think it's a legally significant difference. From my perspective, I would not be prepared today to vote for the draft that gives you the okay. If you could, if you would be willing to give us a little bit more time, I'd like to think about it a little bit more in light of the new facts that you've relayed to us today.
Okay, I understand. Commissioner Weintraub, on page 3 of the Democracy Engine Advisory Opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It says the convenience fee is set to cover all of the fees and costs of the financial institutions involved in the credit card transaction. That is the bank issuing the credit card, the card association, the processing, and the card network. So there's a transfer account which uses the merchant account. And what PayPal and WePay do is just the next generation of merchant accounts.
I
believe also in GivingSphere, it's again use of an independent financial institution.
I hear what you're saying. I just would like a little bit of time to
understand
for me to process that information, if that's okay with you.
Yes, it is.
Does anybody else have any questions for Professor Zolt? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. To the extent that part of your business model is providing this sort of service to campaigns, which seems to be the new twist that the vice chair has spotted, any sense of what percentage of your business that would be? Because I could envision a situation where what you're doing may be fine for others, but not be fine for, depending on who you are. I'm just trying to get a sense of how this, what this really means in terms of how much of your business model is tied to the issue that the vice chair has raised.
Commissioner Hunter, could you repeat Commissioner McCann's question just in brief? I'm hearing you fine, and my ability to hear Commissioner McCann is not as good.
Huh. I'm going to ask him to speak a little bit louder and clearer into the microphone.
Okay.
How about this? Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. That's a lot better.
Wonderful. The question was rather rambling, so I can't repeat it in a clear way.
Which is why I didn't try to.
Which is how I usually ask.
Then I'll give a rambling answer.
That's good. That's good. You'll fit right in here. The concern I think the vice chair is raising is that there may be a difference legally depending on who your client is servicing. And I don't want to read into it too much, but I'm just thinking ahead down the road. And the question was, how much of your business model is tied to or dedicated to, whatever phrase you want to use, providing the service to campaigns as opposed to other folks, donors or whatnot? Because I think that seems to be potentially an issue that the vice chair has raised that may result in a different answer. And I'm trying to get ahead of the curve and flesh that out now to see, is there a way that you at least get half a loaf? I don't want to forego the other half of the loaf yet. Vice chair is smiling, so that means that both loaves are still on the table. But I want to get a sense of,
get the knives out for the loaves,
yeah. Right, before we cut the loaf, get a sense more factually, is this really a real issue, or is this something that is tangential to what you're doing?
So in terms of what percentage of our business model is geared towards our donors and which geared towards the political committee, I think in my ideal world, Commissioner McCann, is that if we have our election between Obama and Romney and people using Repledge each give $10 million to each candidate, such that all $20 million goes to charity, that would be a perfect result from the Repledge perspective. To the extent there is spillover funds that will go to the candidate, then I think we are providing a limited service in transferring those funds and information. But I think we're doing it as a commercial vendor. I think we are, in the ordinary course of business, charging a commercial reasonable fee. And I think for the commercial vendor, there's no requirement of a specific quantity of service. It can be this very limited service. We just have to charge a reasonable fee to avoid any of the facilitation challenges that were raised in Draft B. So I think we can provide a limited amount of service, charge for it, but yet not have it rise to where facilitating fundraising.
Let's assume that there's an insufficient number of commission votes to give you a green light to do the latter, the limited portion with the fee. Does that undermine your ability to do the first part, which seems to be more of your central focus, to take your hypothetical $20 million to charity? Does saying no to the more discreet issue stop $20 million going to charity?
Okay. I'm not sure I understand the question.
Let me try it again. Let's assume, for the sake of argument, the commission says, yes, you can do your service for donors, but no, you can't do it for campaigns.
Okay.
Does that kill your business model? What does that do to you as a practical matter?
A practical matter, I think our platform doesn't work anymore, because our platform is set on the notion of we have a campaign arms race, we want mutual arms reduction, and we fully appreciate that it won't be even, it won't be $20 million for each. And therefore, I think our members have the right to expect that if their pledge to a candidate is not matched, the candidate would receive that funds. But again, Commissioner McCann, it is similar to Democracy Engine and GivingSphere in that connection, in that the money is provided through this web-based platform and then transferred to a political committee. So I don't think we're asking the commission to approve a new structure. It's just a new application of that structure.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Madam Vice Chair, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, Mr. Zolt, who's paying the fee?
Say again?
Who's paying the fee? You said you're providing a commercial.
So the fee is physically paid by the member, but the political committee receives this fund net of the fee. So if we have a total fee charged on the transaction of, let's say, 5%, and $100 starts out from the donor, the political committee would get $95 if nobody matches that fee, nobody matches that pledge. So again, they'll be paying, the political committee would be paying for the services just by receiving a net amount. If this was important to the commission, we could split the fee between the member and the political committee, but economically it would work out identically. And in Democracy Engine and in GivingSphere, they received, the political committees received the amounts net of any fees, just like our structure.
This is Commissioner McGann again. When you mean you could split the fee, but it would work out the same economically, do you mean that there'd be the same amount of charitable money that would occur, or do you mean it just as a symbolic, we could split the fee, but it ends up being the same underlying transaction? I didn't understand.
So transaction-wise, it would be exactly the same. So if we had a total 5% fee, we could either charge it all to the member, we could split it 2.5 a piece to the member and the political committee, or we could charge 5% to the political committee when they receive it and 5% to the charitable organization when they receive it.
But the net would remain the same, is the point. Okay.
Any other questions for Professor Zolt? Okay, Professor Zolt, according to what I've got here, the deadline for this request is May 1st. So we'll be in touch with you to sort of determine whether we can get an answer by then, but it's looking like we're going to have to ask you for a little bit more time, as the Vice Chair said. So Mr. Lutz from the Office of General Counsel will be in touch with you regarding the timing, if that works for you.
Okay.
And we also may have additional questions, which we'll send via email.
Okay, Chair Hunter and the rest of the commissioners, I appreciate the opportunity to answer your questions, and I just hope you move favorably on draft day.
Thank you very much, and again, thank you for your patience this morning. We really appreciate your calling. It was a very helpful conversation.
Okay, thanks again, and hope you guys have a good lunch.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Good breakfast. Okay, so I am told that we're able to gavel the meeting out and still record Commissioner Walther's votes as long as he does so by the end of the day, and I just wanted to mention that in case there's any objection. If not, we will proceed accordingly. Mr. Palmer, are there any management and administrative matters to discuss?
Madam Chair, there are no such matters.
Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned.